Blog Talk Radio.
Brother Jason, please begin the show.
Yes, sir.
Beginning all things in the name of the Most High, we thank God for coming. We thank God for this day. This is Jason X, and this is also Blog Talk Radio. Saturday, October 21st, 2023, I believe we had an opening song. Are we going to play that, Brother Forrest?
No, sir, brother. You never chose an opening song. Please continue.
All right. Thank you so much. I'd like to begin by thanking God for this medium called radio. Most people that do interviews are now switched over to YouTube channels. They switched over to various visual media, leaving behind radio, which was the original theater of the mind. Here at Blog Talk Radio, here at Black Hole Radio, we continue the tradition that was set by our ancestors, the great griots of old, who sat in front of open flame, children of the village, to give them information, history, and entertainment based on that which we know and which we love. We want to continue the theater of the mind with this show, and we have with us today hip-hop for freshmen. Hip-hop for freshmen, I'm going to introduce the owner, the CEO, the mind behind hip-hop for freshmen, brother by the name of Alan Perry. I thought we had a song that he produced, I guess it was early on, we'll get into it, by the name of Money or Meaning, name the artist K.O. in the hip-hop world. And as you know, we're celebrating 50 years of hip-hop. I would challenge that by saying hip-hop has been around much longer than 50 years, but the formal 50 years of hip-hop we celebrate. We love hip-hop. We love what it has done for our community. We love what hip-hop has done for our culture. And we, as hip-hop artists, hip-hop performers, hip-hop producers, we in that community know its value. So without any further delay, I'd like to welcome to the airways our brother, Alan Perry. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Black Hole Radio, Brother Alan.
Brother Jason, thank you. Thank you for having me. That was a beautiful introduction. I'm blessed to be here, and I really appreciate you having a platform like this that support people like me and black businesses like what I got going on. So I'm looking forward to having a great conversation with you.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. As I always say, this is just a conversation between brothers. I like the audience to picture themselves as members of the barbershop community. One thing that we had in terms of entrepreneurship that was always our own was the barbershop and the beauty salon. And, you know, Ice Cube, as a producer, did a wonderful job illuminating the type of talk that goes on inside of the barbershop on a Saturday afternoon, a Saturday morning. Brothers going into the barbershop to get their hair fresh for Saturday evening's activities, Sunday's church activities, and sit down and give an opportunity for each other to catch up with what the local news is, catch up with some of the gossip, catch up with political views, religious views, and that was the place in our community that we maintained. The overall picture of the barbershop is black entrepreneurship. And when you have black entrepreneurship, the reason why we had our own barbershops is because we wouldn't trust white folks or anyone else doing our hair. We knew what the fresh styles were. So we sat at the barbershop and we helped black entrepreneurship while we entertained ourselves. So I want the audience, again, to picture yourself in a barbershop on a Saturday morning, brothers around getting their hair set up for the evening's activities, and we kick it like this. Brother Alan, do me a favor and give us a biography of yourself. It could be, take your time. This is long-form radio. It's what I like to call big talk, not small talk. It's big talk. So take your time and give us an introduction into your life, how we got to this place right now.
Right, right. So, yeah, my name is Alan Perry. I'm from Harlem. I was born in Harlem Hospital. 41. I think I'll be 42 in December. Missing I forget the birthdays now. They all kind of mesh together. But yeah,
yes,
yeah,
sir.
I'm from Harlem, and I've been at this this entrepreneurship thing for a while. I've always had an interest in drawing and art as a young boy, and then in my teens, fell in love with hip hop. I think the first track I listened to was an EPMD track, and Da Brat, believe it or not, and then started writing in my spare time, and then recording in my bedroom, and then went off to college and started doing some live performances there, and then on and off campus, and then after school, after college, went off into the corporate world for a bit and had a music career simultaneously, and went back to school, enrolled in a couple master programs, launched a few ventures, and along the way, I've always been writing this curriculum, this entrepreneurship curriculum that we're going to get it more into in a bit, and self-published the second volume earlier this year, and now my goal is, and my mission has always been entrepreneurship and teaching it to the youth. What else? I went to the University of, I'll start from high school. I went to Ohalos High School in the Bronx, went to University of Scranton in Pennsylvania for college. Then I went off and got a master's in entertainment business from Full Sail University. I know I'm scattered all over the place, so
no, brother, it's your life. No, brother, you're doing fine, and it's your life, and this is what the audience tunes in for, is to find out a little bit more about the person and what brings them
right
to where they are now. Talk about a little about your family. Do you have brothers and sisters, mom, dad, single-parent household? How did you grow up? I know you went to school. And you went to, you know, have very
oldest
full
of three.
You know, oldest of three, okay. And that puts you, you know, they have the Enneagram, which is part of the Sufi tradition. Your birth order determines a lot about who you're going to be in life. The firstborn is usually the one that steps out. They're the one that the parents experiment on, you know, as the first baby. And they are find themselves responsible for the subsequent children. So as a firstborn, being an entrepreneur is not a big stretch. So the brothers and sisters, after you, another male, female, how did that go, the birth order?
Yeah, so I have my brother, he's next, he was after me, and then my sister. Yeah, so it's just us three.
Uh-huh. And the years in between each other, is it stair steps or is it several years in between each other? How did that work out?
My brother is 4 years younger, and my sister is 10. Yeah.
10 years. Yeah, so, again, you found yourself being responsible for them as you're growing up.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, just, you know, for the audience and the way that it goes down, responsibility carries on, you know, from the early ages, being a responsible man, being a responsible person, being responsible for your siblings. You know, we're going out now. I need you to look out for your brother and sister. You make sure that the house is this, that, and you carrying on the mindset of the parents, you know, so that it makes sense that did your brother and sister also go to college?
My sister is graduated from college. She's working on her master's now. I think she's actually working on her PhD now. And my brother, he didn't finish. I think he just got his associate's. So he finished 2 years. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because that, again, that always plays a part in how the firstborn sets himself up, it's easy for the subsequent children to follow in their footsteps because it's expected of them. The parents expect that. You know, you look at your brother, look at your brother, look at your brother. And it's always a good lesson for young parents as they, you know, they're setting up their family to pour in that love and that light to the eldest because it spills over into the subsequent children. It's a good look. Now, what was your traditional, your formal education like? You told us the schools you attended. Just give us some more information about that. What type of student were you? What were your relationship to your friends?
Right. So I went to O'Hallows High School. I'll start there. I was very shy, very young teenage kid. And I remember freshman year, entering high school, and just wanted to be a part of a group. And I tried out for the basketball team. Didn't make it, but I met some cool guys there and then found my space on the track team. On my Forrest Gump tip, just running. And found out that I was fast, you know, and started my legacy there and started winning medals and taking the track team to the Penn Relays and just really competing on a higher level in high school. So that followed me throughout my 4 years in high school and senior year. Became student body class president. Did some great work in the school. And went on to Scranton University. I chose that school. We had a guy who graduated from O'Hallows that went to that school, came back and spoke. And out of all the schools I applied to, which was Villanova, Howard, and Scranton, Scranton basically gave me a nice academic scholarship. You know, I was always an honor roll student, first and second honor rolls all the time. Schoolwork was very easy for me. You know, I kind of figured out that all the teacher wanted me to do was regurgitate what they told me. And once I kind of figured that out, I'm just like, this is easy, you know, with the exception of certain classes. So, yeah, I went off to Scranton, it's interesting because as I reflect on this as a kid, one of my concerns was the expense of college and that being overbearing for my parents. So in hindsight, if I could go back, I would do things a little differently. I would probably do 2 years in Scranton and then the other two at a HBCU. Yeah, I chose Scranton, and it was a great experience. Either way, I tapped more into my artistry. I participated in those showcases on campus. The school was predominantly talent shows, correct? The school was predominantly Caucasian. It was a Jesuit Catholic school. It's like O'Hallows was a Catholic school. So we had an organization called the United Colors, and, you know, it was really just a handful of us in that university. And I kind of made my mark by introducing spoken word, and I would perform on campus at events. And there was this one poem I had in particular. It was called A Big Bag of Skittles. And I forget it, the poem in its entirety, but it was basically describing how all these Skittles are of different colors and got along in this bag. And, you know, it was joyous to the consumer and whatever. It painted a good picture for the environment that was on at that campus. You know, I will never forget it. I remember going orientation with my mother and my aunt. And, you know, there was bigotry written on in graffiti on the side of one brother's car. And so I was stepping into a crazy environment. I had no idea. You know, I lived a very, I wouldn't say sheltered, but for the most part it was sheltered. Like, my mom's kept me out the streets, and I was focused on schoolwork, and I was very social in school anyway. So I didn't hang in the streets much, and I wasn't really exposed to a lot of the challenges in our communities, you know, until I got to college. And it was like, it felt like I stepped into a time capsule in hindsight. Anyway, I experienced that. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I was just going to ask you, did your parents prepare you for that, knowing the type of environment that you were going to be sent to, you know, that there was a from growing up in Harlem in Uptown and then going into a white environment? How did your parents, or did they prepare you for that type of bigotry, prejudice, and racism that you would find? Did they prepare you at all?
No. My parents had a kind of hands-off type of parenting style, and I respected it in regards to what I was meant. I basically just made my decisions on my own, you know, even down from the college I chose to, you know, from a very young age, you know, I was just figuring things out on my own. And, you know, they worked, and I took care of my siblings, you know, when I needed to, and took care of myself when it was time to, you know. It was a shock, and I experienced quite a few things on that campus. But it was a good experience. It was a great experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anything in particular stand out to you now that you're a grown man, in terms of that type of dynamic in the school setting? Now, I heard you say that you would have liked to have gone to an HBCU. Was it as a result of some of the things that you found at that university?
No. You know, I've had younger cousins in my family asked me about my experience. Like when my aunt called me not too long ago, and she actually posed this question to me because her daughter is choosing. She's in a school now, college now, but she wants to switch. And I just gave my two cents. I said, in my experience, I think she should have both experiences, you know, regardless, you know, because the world is a diverse world. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So just to have both perspectives would be nice, would be ideal for her. And she respected that response. So, I mean, like I said, there's nothing I would, there's no particular reason. I just feel like that balance is necessary because that's the world that we live in.
Absolutely. You have so many horror stories, you know, being in the nation. We get a lot of things come through our desk. Brother Forrest and I used to do a show here on Black Hole Radio called Unlawful Captives. And I never will forget, one sister called up one evening, and she gave us a story of her son in a similar situation as yours, going to an all-white, or, you know, majority-white university. And he was drugged at a party one night. He went there, you know, top-flight student, academic scholarship, the whole nine yards, very popular, very sociable, and he was drugged one night, and he basically turned into a vegetable. He came home, you know, dropped out of school, and locked himself in his room. He didn't speak much after that. It was, you know, it took him to, you know, medical doctors, it took him to psychologists, psychiatrists, and he basically turned into a social outcast in his home, and they wondered what happened to him. And they found out later on that his white counterpart at the university was so envious of him and his abilities in sports and athleticism, in academia, that they drugged him, and he was never the same. And it's a cautionary tale. And I just think about that as we're talking about your aunt and your cousin, that these type of things need to be expressed, that we are going into an environment that could sometimes be hostile to us, and it's designed to break us because we are, in most cases, going into university as the best and the brightest and the hope of our family and our community. And just it seems like a natural thing for them to want to cut that off at the knees or head it off at the path. And it's just something that came to my mind when you were speaking, but go ahead. Just, you know, still talk about, you know, that preparation for where you are now going into our hip-hop for freshmen show, the hip-hop for freshmen, because I'm thinking about it as we're talking about the school and the education piece. Why is hip-hop for freshmen? Because it's that type of environment, the academic environment that the freshmen. And I thought the play on words was real cool. You know, freshman, you know. So continue on, bro.
So, yeah, so I'm in Scranton University, and then around my senior year, one of my closest friends, I'll never forget him, his name is John Tilkey, very strong brother, not a brother, but, you know, very strong brother. And we just took a liking towards each other, and we just set ourselves apart, and we decided to come up with an invention. You know, we didn't want to work for no one. We saw that adults had this issue with money, and we just didn't really understand as older teenagers. And we said, we're just going to invent something. So senior year, we try to invent something. We come up with nothing, right? I graduate. I'm working my first job. Before I start working my first job, I'm transferring all my belongings from my off-campus apartment on the mega bus back to Harlem. It was just interesting. And I got all my buddies. My buddies came to see me from the Bronx prior to graduation, and they left a bunch of their fitted hats. So I had about 15 fitted hats that I had to bring back along with all my crap. And I ended up bending those hats and ruining those hats, and I felt really bad because they were kind of brand new, and these brothers took care of their hats. Now I owe these brothers like $50, $40 a piece. And then in that moment, I said, why isn't there some type of cap encasement to protect these things when traveling? So I invented something like that. I embarked on that journey. I put it down on paper, and then I said, I'm home, and I'm sure you've seen the commercial with the caveman hitting the wheel and vent help.
Yeah.
I called them up.
Right.
Yeah, right. So I called them up. I paid about $1,200. They put a packet together for me, tons of research, target audience, the material, if it's ever been tried before. I basically took that information, packaged it up into a PowerPoint presentation, and I made a list of the companies in the hat industry that I wanted to pitch to, and it was Reebok, Models, New Era, and Wilson. And everyone said, no, great idea, but no except for New Era. Long story short, New Era was very interested, but they wouldn't sign my non-disclosure agreement. I think I was like 21, 22 at the time. And at the time, I was working at UBS Payne Weber. And so I'm around these finance guys, and they're like, you're sitting on gold here. 2-3 weeks passed. They're like, just present it to them. And I'm like, no. But eventually, I ended up doing it. And a week go by, and I'm emailing them, and nothing. I remember this like it was yesterday. And then I finally get an email letter and an email from them saying, thank you, but no thank you. We have in-house engineers that can blah, blah, blah. But thank you, but no thank you. 1 year later, I'm in my parents' house right here on 150th between Amsterdam and Broadway, playing video games, and my close friend, Billy Owens, William Owens, he came by. He said, I saw your cap case in the store, 143rd in Broadway. I got dressed so fast, speed walked to the 140 whatever in Broadway, and sure enough, the cap case was there. Basically, whoever modified what I sent them, and that was my first lesson in the real world. I learned so much from that experience. I'm like, I went through all this schooling, and where was the lesson about people stealing your ideas, intellectual property, protecting your stuff, right? I got a crash course, real-life course on intellectual property protection, which is why it's in my book. So I tried to pursue something legally at that age, but I don't remember how far I went with it, but I just basically just left it and took the lesson. While I'm doing all that, I'm working corporate, and I'm working on my artistry, right? So at night, I'm writing, I'm recording, and I'm booking shows. And basically, I got to that point where I got my it was my first corporate job. UBS was my second. This was my first corporate job. I remember it like it was yesterday, man. I'm sitting next to a woman in her cubicle, and she's like, I'm about to retire. And she's like, I've been here for 40 years. And she's like, in this chair, in this cubicle. And I literally just saw my life flash before my eyes, and I was just like, not me. So I went back to doing what I was doing in my teens, and I said, I'm going to try this music thing professionally. And that started that journey. So I'm working my 9-to-5s, and I'm doing my artistry at night, writing, recording, performing. And I basically was submitted my resume to a bunch of temp agencies. So I had mostly paralegal jobs and jobs in corporate because they paid. And, you know, I had the piece of paper at that time, so that's what I was applying to. But they were mostly temp jobs. Got to the point where I was 2 years in, doing 2-3 shows a week. I had a buzz for myself. I had a couple songs that kept being requested when I was performing. And 2007 comes along. 2006 comes along. I got my real estate license, so I started renting apartments in the city. I was always a guy that was not afraid of work. You know, I'd get my hands dirty. So I had two jobs, and I'm rapping and doing these shows. So there was a competition on Black Planet that was sponsored by Vibe Magazine and Heineken, and it was a nationwide competition. And they basically threw everybody in the pot, you know, singers, rappers from different genres, country, down south, west coast, and it was just thousands and thousands of artists in this pot. And it was a competition where people would just vote online at Black Planet. I beat out a lot of the artists and made it to the top three, and it was crazy. It went on for months, and I remember it like it was yesterday, too. I'm online every day just hitting people up, and they're on their MySpace, on their Black Planet, vote for my song, every day, every round, you know what I mean? And I made it through. They flew the top three to New York. Obviously not me. I was here, and we performed in front of three judges. One of the judges was Styles P, and I forget the two others. Long story short, I didn't win the competition. It's crazy because Styles P was a celebrity judge, and when it came time to judge my performance, he basically said, I don't like New York rappers. So I lost the battle. I mean, not the battle. I lost the competition. They gave it to this guy from Detroit who had an opportunity to record with Styles, right, which was great. But Black Planet and Vibe Magazine felt that my performance was better, and so did everyone else. And they gave me a full page in Vibe Magazine. A $40,000 spread for free. Yeah, it was amazing. Timeless. And they were very interested in what I was going to do next. So I went on writing, recording, performing, and I got approached by a label called Boom Entertainment. Actually, this was prior to Vibe. I missed this step. But I was signed to a label called Boom Entertainment, and it was partially owned by Lenny Kravitz. And I had some cool engineers, and I would write jingles and write songs with artists and across seas, and I had a demo deal myself, so I would write songs to beats that they created, and I would bring in my music too. And they had a whole plan for me. They shot me as this LL kind of figure, and I wasn't really with the branding that they had in mind at the time. But we worked together, we recorded, and I learned some things about royalties, right, and being in a studio and all of that, and signing and contracts. I had a guy at the time who I wanted to manage me. He was very popular on the scene, but we just couldn't see eye to eye, and he wasn't allowed to go into some of the rooms that I was into based off his reputation. Long story short, I went around performing. I did so many shows. I mean, I had a staff. I had a roll. This is when we had Rolodexes. So I had a Rolodex of business cards from A&Rs. I mean, Chris Lively, you name it. I had it. And I touched shoulders with them, and they're just like, keep going, keep doing your thing. And I gave all those business cards to the guy I wanted to be my manager, and he ran off with the club, never saw him again. And that took a big blow to me as an artist, but I had to keep going. So I got approached by Capitol Records, and it was at a Keith Murray release party. I remember it like yesterday, and then I was by myself. I didn't really have a team. I had my hype man, and I had people who would help me with things, but I didn't have a team in that regards on the business side. So I decided to go back to school and just stop with the music thing and learn the other side. Along the way, while I'm doing my artistry, I'm learning concepts like copyright and trademark and infringement and branding and how to start a label and LLCs and business bank account. All these are foreign concepts to me, and I'm learning them as I'm an artist, right? Never yes. taught this stuff in school. Never took these classes. So not only am I learning them, I'm writing them down. I write everything down, you know. Live and die by my to-do list. You know, I pray, and before I pray, I write my to-do list, and I wake up, and I know exactly what I got to do every day. That's just how I'm built myself.
Excellent.
I lost my train of thought for a second there. Where was I?
All right, if I'm ready, I'll tell you exactly where you were. I'll tell you exactly where you were. This is the point where you are, as an artist, you're learning the business side of the music industry from the inside.
Right, right. So I got to the point where I'm exposed to these concepts. I ended up doing all these things unknowingly, but knowingly, and then I registered a song with Sound Exchange, and a couple months later, I get a royalty check for $11,000, and I'm like, oh,
nice.
Snap. Right? So
yeah.
I'm like this is the play. This is the blueprint. And then I didn't understand at that age why artists was talking, the labels is robbing me. You know, I'm listening to Prince and Michael Jackson and other artists talk about copyrights and publishing, and I'm like, but I just did it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I put it together in the book, and I said, I started writing it, and then as I'm writing it, the goal was for it to be a curriculum to help other artists, to help brothers who want to get in this hip-hop game. It was never really a thing to help me because I got the knowledge and it was already embedded in my brain. So I said, I want this to be a curriculum, right? And I embarked on this. I started this journey when I was like 24 years old. And originally it was called Hip Hop Academy. And I wanted it to be an online school. It had 20 classes. And I was like, these are the 20 things that artists need to know, right, to get in the game, right? You can't be an artist if you don't know copyrights. You just have to know these things. And then I sat back and I'm just like, well, where's the book on this? Why hasn't no one dissected it this way and framed it this way, right? Well, God has blessed me with this vision, so here we go, right? This is for me. And I just started putting it together. I remember I was running around as a real estate agent, and one of my clients was a guy named Glenn Johnson, God rest his soul. He took a liking towards me. I rented him his first apartment in New York City. He was a tech guy who dropped out of school, dropped out of college his second year, and got a job making over $100,000. And I just thought his story was fascinating. And he took a liking to me because he loved my music. So we built this relationship, and then I told him what I was doing, and he's like, let me build your whole infrastructure, the IT part of. So we started working together for years. We worked together. That relationship parted for various reasons. No one's fault in particular, but I kept going with it. Fast forward to Capitol Records. Again, the business was just over my head. I didn't understand the jargon. So I decided to go back to school and get a master's and enroll in the master's program in entertainment business. So So at this time, I was, before I enrolled in that program, I was in New York City. And I was done with New York City at that point, and I didn't want to live my whole life in one area. So I relocated to Maryland. I lived in Maryland 4 years, you know, before I went, finally started that first master's program. I went to Maryland, ended up there for 4 years, and my father's side of the family is out there, so I got to spend some time with my cousin who was getting married, and I took a job as a teacher, a graphic design teacher at a charter school in Washington, D.C. Pretty interesting experience. But in that experience, what I did was I took my graphic design class and I incorporated entrepreneurship. So, for example, one class, I made the kids design business cards for a concept that they wished that they had in their neighborhood or service that they had, right? And then that ended up being them wanting to print these business cards and pass them out in their neighborhood and actually start this business. So I've always incorporated business and entrepreneurship wherever. And then I remember it, again, like it was yesterday, the principal offered me a great position at the Connecting School, a sister in D.C., and she offered me a position, and then she gave me a book to read at the same time. And the book was called Who Moved My Cheese? And she said,
Say it again. Who Moved My Cheese?
The book was Who Moved My Cheese? Yeah, I was so perplexed, right? Yeah, and she gave it to me. And she said, so I read it. It's a children's book, very easy to read. And I understand, but I read the book, and it just it pushed my wig back, man. And so we had the next meeting, and I said, if I understand correctly, you're telling me to not take the offer. You're telling me to go. She said, I'm not telling you anything. She said, do what you feel. And in a nutshell, I continued on with my journey. I didn't take the position, and I left and embarked on the journey to Miami, down south, which is basically what she was telling me. She's basically telling me she see more in me and for me not to stay here, you know. And right. It was a very challenging and interesting situation, but I'll never forget her, you know, Miss Falvey. Never forget her.
I'm gonna stop you right there, Brother Allen, because I just got a flash of something that you may or may not have seen in this as a pattern. When you at that desk job, there was a woman in the cubicle next to you who was ready to retire. Her experience caused you to get up and move on. Second one.
That's right.
Now passes you a book after she passes you an offer that would basically have locked you in to a really good setup. Also gives you information that helps you to make the move to move on. Two women in your life, unbeknownst to them, giving you the mindset to continue to push your dreams. I just got that listening to your story. I don't know if you recognize that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's big.
That's huge. Yeah. I'll never forget either one of them. So I basically packed up my Jeep at the time, drove to Miami from D.C. That was an adventure in itself.
Mm-hmm.
I get there, and all I know is I just don't want to be in the cold anymore. I just want to show me where the beach is at. I don't know nothing about Miami, and I've never been there before. I know some of my friends have been there, but I've never been anywhere, let alone by myself. And this is me embarking on that manhood, kicking the crutch, and really standing on my two.
Right.
So basically, I'm able to do this because I enrolled in that entertainment business program while I was in D.C., and I took out a loan from the school. Basically, I had about $9,000, and then I was like, cool, this is enough for me to get an apartment and set up and start new and just fully focus on this program. It was a 2-year program, but I took it in 1 year. And upon completing it, it gave me the confidence to publish the book. Again, it was initially titled Hip Hop for Freshmen, but through the program, it made me change the name to Independent Artistry. So that's what I call that process of being an independent artist, or how to be an aspiring entrepreneur. What are the elements? It's called Independent Artistry, right? Writing, the branding, et cetera, et cetera. And put together my thesis. And then I shortly realized that the world is the internet. And I didn't know anything about internet marketing. I knew how to build websites because as an independent artist, I built my own website. I bought, my name was KO, and I bought therealko.com. And I learned how to, I fell in love with designing websites. But I knew nothing about the back end of everything, and marketing and indexing and search engine optimization. So I went back to school, got my second master's in digital marketing from Full Sail. And now I was equipped to launch the book. I officially self-published the book in 2013. And then I just started putting together like various marketing plans using Facebook ads and organic search engines, optimizations, affiliate marketing. Mm-hmm. I mean, you name it. I'm just trying all types of stuff, automation, email marketing, because I had the knowledge now. And basically I've been mentoring and consulting artists and entrepreneurs since then. And it's been a challenge. Artists and entrepreneurs don't really know what they need until they need it. It was a huge learning curve. I didn't get off as many books as I thought. But what it did was it made me take those concepts and start other businesses on my own. So one of the businesses I started in Miami was a residential cleaning company. Mm-hmm. I was in Miami, and this was pre-Uber. Uber comes. It changed my life. Now I have access, because I didn't have a car. When Uber came, now I have access to inland Miami, further up Miami, not just Miami Beach. It just changed everything. And then I just loved the business concept of having a business where you can be behind your computer and control things and run things. So I went a similar concept, and I stumbled into the cleaning business and went to go clean for this company and learned the ins and outs of residential cleaning. And then once I got to about 700 toilets, I basically said, I'm going to start my own cleaning business. Business was called 411 Maid. And I bought a vanity number, 877-411 Maid, and I bought the domain name, 411maid.com. And I text enabled the 800 number and made it automated. So, and then I just threw a bunch of flyers everywhere and did my marketing thing online. Sure enough, people started texting this number, booking appointments, paying $140 for a 4-hour cleaning. I was doing well. I had a bunch of maids locally, and I had a network of maids nationwide. Called up Groupon, had Groupon ads nationwide. Long story short, I did well for a bit until the maids started no-calling and no-showing in certain areas like Houston, Texas, just a lot of no-call, no-shows. It's really hurting the brand. And then Hurricane Irma came and then just washed me out. And I ended up relocating back to New York City, which is where I am now. But I still like to say those concepts from the book helped me start other businesses. You know, I started that business, and I started a promoting business. I used to throw these mansion parties on South Beach while I was there. And it was just a really fun time, you know, incorporating the concepts that I've learned from my artistry into other aspects. 2018-19 come around, I'm back in New York, I'm looking at the book. Meanwhile, all this is going on with the cleaning company, and I'm still pitching to schools the curriculum. So there were school districts in Miami that I would book meetings with, and I would pitch there. I even remember one meeting, a school in the Bronx was interested. I flew across the country to pitch to the school. Interesting story, the principal tried to take the curriculum, not knowing that I'm up on copyright infringement. Yeah. And it was just craziness.
So it's full circle to the hat business. But Brother Allen, hold 1 second. I would like to give the call-in number just in case anyone is listening to this particular portion of the story, because I told you, brother, this goes so fast. We got 15 minutes left in the show, and I would like for us to drill down on the business of Hip Hop for Freshmen. But before that, once again, this is Black Hole Radio, Brother Jason and Brother Faris Muhammad. You can call in at 1-563-999-3089. Once again, call in if you want to speak to Brother Allen Perry at 1-563-999-3089. So, again, Brother Allen, could you fast forward to the book, the business, the concept, the website of Hip Hop for Freshmen?
Yeah.
And we're going to let you rock this out until the end of the show. Here we go.
Right. So 2018 comes around. I decide to take the book and rebrand it as Hip Hop for Freshmen. Right. I wanted to target my community directly, so I rebranded it. This year, I gave it a facelift. So I rebranded the color, the cover, and I basically put the workbook inside of the handbook. So basically, Hip Hop for Freshmen is a self-help curriculum, a self-help homeschool curriculum, a self-help academic curriculum, a self-help book teaching entrepreneurship through hip hop. It takes you from 10 steps. I've identified 10 steps it takes to be either an independent artist or an entrepreneur. And those 10 things are creative writing, create a brand, copyright law, trademark law, how to create an LLC, how to open a business bank account, intro to business taxes, publishing, and digital distribution. The program, it's not just a curriculum, it's a book. It's also a program that can be taught by teachers, and it's also an online course. The online course isn't launched yet, but it's amazing, right?
Yes, sir.
That's pretty much it in a nutshell. The website is hiphopforfreshmen.com, the number 4, hiphopforfreshmen.com. You can check out the About page for more information, and you can check out our team. My team and consists of Camilla Lawson. He's at the Promise Academy, Harlem Children's Zone. He's a Black history teacher for about 15 years and also served as dean. Another one of my colleagues that's a part of the team, Lauren. She's the special education director at the Promise Academy. About 3 years ago, I was given the opportunity to teach a pilot program at the Promise Academy Harlem Children's Zone on the weekends for a couple hours. And it was an amazing opportunity, and they've been extremely supportive throughout this process. The team is fairly new. It also consists of Eric Bullock. He's based out in Trenton, New Jersey. And he's currently pitching to schools, middle schools, and high schools in the Trenton, New Jersey area with the goal of combating the dropout rate that our community is facing. He was introduced to me this past June, looking for an engaging curriculum that's culturally relevant. I've chosen this, and it's been nothing but a cohesive synergy since then. That's Hip Hop for Freshmen. Again, if you want to call in, I'll answer your questions. What else you got for me, brother Jason?
Well, we're opening up the phones right now. Once again, it's 1-563-999-3089, 1-563-999-3089. 3089, and you can ask our brother Alan Perry at the voice,
okay, brother,
the face, the mind. Go ahead, brother.
I have two questions, brother. May I ask, Brother Jason?
Yes, sir, please. Please. This is your show, too, Brother Forrest.
I mean, brother, this is your show, and this is our Brother Alan, our guest, our learned guest, Brother Alan.
Yes, sir.
How much does your course cost? How much does your course cost?
The book is $80 on my website. It's $100 on Amazon. These are just introductory prices. The retail price is $129 for the book, for the curriculum. But again, I work with the budgets of the schools. I know education budgets are tight. So that's the range right there. Yeah.
Say it again, please.
The range is between $80 and $129. So on my site, it's $80, right, for now. It's an introductory price. But the retail price is $129. Yeah. The program itself,
okay,
again, it's all contingent on the budget of the schools. I really don't like to throw numbers out and scare people away. So we just work with budgets, right? The whole goal is to get this book in its home, which is the school system. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Go ahead, Mufar.
My second question is this, brother. Would you be willing to do a follow-up show with us, because this is highly impactful, highly empowering? You're talking about the reason why – this is the reason why Michael Jackson, Prince, and a few others down the line from Sam Cooke up to Prince are dead now. Michael Jackson made a deal with UCLA to teach this course at UCLA. Copyright. Brother Jason and I are very familiar with this premise. Why do artists who get their catalog all of a sudden end up dead? So, brother, would you be willing to do a follow-up show where we could promote this even better, get some more questions asked, and also maybe we have to look into or explore having our own place where people can come and sign up for the course that you teach on a Saturday? Just a thought. I'm throwing it out there. I don't mean to box you into anything. But Brother Jason, I tell you, the three of us are kindred spirits, because we want to educate and liberate our people from mental slavery. So that's it, brother.
That's
thank you.
Yeah, so to answer your question, yes, I'll do a follow-up. You just let me know. And move some things around, and we'll make it happen. No problem. This is my purpose. This is my mission. And I'm 10 toes down with it, you know.
Excellent.
The goal with this is to get this in schools, right? It's like it's a three-pronged thing going on here. Not only to get this in schools, so in the audience, if you know or know someone that knows a parent who has a team or superintendents, teachers, tell them you support this and tell them they need to support this too. They need to check this out. Also, because I had some time as an artist in the music industry, my goal is to get this endorsed by the artists. You know, my goal is to be one of the trailblazers in hip-hop education. Another goal is to expand internationally, right? I had the opportunity to visit Egypt last year, spent about 2 weeks in Hurghada, which is about 3 hours from Luxor, and it was an amazing experience. It was like going into a time capsule. And, you know, I did a 22-mile ATV ride through the Sahara Desert, rode the camels, you know, ate jet skis, and now in the Red Sea. It was just amazing. And then I looked at the community, you know, unfinished infrastructure, and education just came right to the fore, to my mind. Like, how could I make a difference here? How could I help? You know, one my closest friend, Camilla Lassa, you know, he's from Ghana. You know what I mean? So one of my goals, in short, is to bring this program there to Africa, maybe starting in Ghana, and to teach them how to do business abroad in America, right? Teach them these concepts that we have here for business so that they can do business here from abroad. A lot of stuff going on here. A lot of visions I have for this. Go ahead, brother.
So, brother, I'm going to say this, Brother Jason, if I may, because I made this show for 90 minutes. We can go a little bit further on time if we have to. I hate to hijack this interview because it's a powerful interview, but I gotta say something to you, my brother, as a listener. Do you think that our open enemy wants to free us economically? I don't know, thought about that in your quest to bring this into the public, into a school system. Private school systems might do it, but a public school system, the public school system was set up, but it only guarantees you across the United States to give you a sixth grade reading level. That's all it's guaranteed to do. That's all it was set up to make laborers, to make workers who can work and further on this system. You're talking about mental and economic independence. It never goes together with public school systems. That's why they took music out of public school systems. The reason why they took music out is because they realized in the 1960s that brothers and sisters, like companies like Motown, were freeing themselves economically from their stranglehold by making their own music. And they were expert musicians. And they said, okay, we're going to take that out of schools. And then, so just like black people do, we metamorphosed on them. We mutated on them. We said, okay, you took away the music, but you left us with the old music. So we'll sample it. We'll use it. And we'll sample it, and you can never take the drum from us because we can make anything into a drum, and we'll put it to a funky drum beat, and we'll make some new music. And that's where we are now with hip-hop. This present-day conception of hip-hop started from them trying to rip us away from our ability to be independent of it. So I want you to I think you and I, Brother Jason, and whoever else is on your team, we need to have a conversation behind the scenes and talk about
absolutely.
This because where you going, brother? We are there in one sense, but we are not there in another because you have went and did one thing that you just admitted over the show. Nobody taught you this in school. Every time you run up against an obstacle, what you did was you mutated against them. You said, okay, you won't teach me, I'll go learn. I'll sneak into this master's program. I'll do this, I'll do that. And everything that you've done to bring forth hip-hop for freshmen was an independent course study. It wasn't that curriculum did not exist before you, correct?
It did not, no.
We on the same page, brother. You know, and I can laugh because, you know, I put some pressure on you behind the scenes before the show to see for your tolerance level.
You know,
because I think there's about a 20 years difference in age, you know. So we got to talk, brother. We got to build. Go ahead, brother.
I want to
go back into the listening room.
Listen, brother. This is always, in my opinion, divine intervention. There was a brother by the name of, and there is a brother by the name of Byron Parker, who's a Facebook friend of mine. And Brother Byron Parker made the connection. He reached out to me over social media and asked if I could help. And this is not the first time you asked me to help. I built a beat for him a couple of times, and we were going to do a collaboration with his music. And he made the connection between myself and Brother Alan Perry. Knowing the type of brother that I am, knowing the type of brother that Brother Alan Perry is, knowing the type of brother that Brother Forrest is, I made the connection to my other venture, which is Black Hole Radio, Black Hole Entertainment. This is divine intervention. Your concept, as Brother Forrest just said, Brother Allen, is revolutionary in the fact that it is designed to free people who had normally been enslaved because of the lack of knowledge. So
that's right.
As a freedom fighter, we are here to help you, brother. It's now 12 o'clock, and we're going to close the show with the promise that Brother Allen is going to be back. We're going to subsequently go over the notes on the show. We're going to do some editing to entice people to come by editing parts and making some audio clips that we can have people to come and populate the next time we do this. So stay tuned and be prepared to go on to hiphopforfreshmen.com. Listen up.
Hip-hop Brother Jason, if I may.
Yes, sir.
If I may, before you officially close out, I want to give a shout out to Byron Parker. That's been my buddy since my music days. And we actually met when I was looking for some studio time to record an album. And he was my engineer at one part. And we've been very close friends ever since then. And he is a special individual. You know, he's very special to me. And we talk almost every day. Shout out to Byron Parker, Peter Don for making this connection. And this definitely is a divine intervention. One last thing, I want to speak on an event that I went to, I was invited to yesterday. This book is opening a lot of doors for me, praise to the Most High. I had an invitation to an event at the Audubon Ballroom, better known as the Shabazz Center, where Malcolm X was assassinated. And there was an Afrofuturism titled event. And basically, they're launching or they're preparing the opera version of the life of Malcolm X. And I got the opportunity to meet one of his daughters and meet some really cool people in the room. And I felt like this book fits in with that movement as well. And
absolutely.
Again, it's all divine intervention. And it was a dream of mine to enter that building, and things have been moving. So I look forward to building with you, Brother Jason, and Forrest as well. And I'll come back. You got my word. Thank you for this opportunity. And go ahead, do your thing, brother.
No, brother, this is how we do it. As I said, brother, the time went by so quickly. We went through approximately 4 of the 12 questions that I had prepared for you. So you know there's a whole lot more to unpack. I would like to, just in the moment, I would like to purchase one of the core studies, because what I want to do in the time that we are building is I would like to do a real-time test on the product that you present. And the real-time test is we're gonna have a young person sit in this, and I know plenty because they come through our doors all the time that say that they want this as a career, they want this as something that they want to do, and they're stuck. I have a brother in mind right now. He's a Nigerian artist by the name of Solo Star, and we're going to test this because it's important that we show our people how to free themselves, and your book, your course study, does that. We no longer need to be dependent on people that have time and time again showed us who they are by robbing us in our faces when we have the ability to free ourselves. Adam Clayton Powell, the great New York politician, asked the audience, what's in your hand? He said, you want to free yourself? Look in your hand. What's in your hand? And our brother Alan Perry has showed us a little bit more about what's in our hand. Thank you again for coming on to Black Hole Radio in the Blog Talk platform. We're going to speak about this again. Everybody, keep your ears to the radio. Keep the radio as a revolutionary tool. And we'll see you again very soon. Thank you again, Brother Forrest. Greetings to your family and greetings to all those who are listening. We thank you again for being a part of the Black Hole Radio family. Anything else, Brother Allen, before we close out?
As I mentioned earlier to the listeners, if you know parents, if you know superintendents, your teachers, tell them to check this out. You know, we've been talking about where are the black men in education? Where's the curriculum that's culturally relevant to us and our kids? Well, here's one of them, and here's one curriculum right here. So, yeah, check it out, hiphopforfreshmen.com. And I need your support. You know, we need donations. We need sponsors. Yeah, let's make it happen. Thank you again, Brother Jason.
And thank you, my brother.
Thank you again, Brother
Forrest. Thank you, listeners. Yes, sir. Thank you again, listeners. All right, brother. We're back in
I'm in it.